Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones, and this is episode 13. In today's episode, I'm going to tell you how and why to save on your veterinary fees, talk a little bit about Dr. Pohl with the recent finding against him and his reply, plus I'm going to answer a listener's question in terms of how can they finally stop their dog from barking. Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search for Veterinary Secrets. We're also on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets or go to stitcher.com/podcast/veterinary-secrets. I would definitely appreciate it if you'd subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. You can do so on iTunes or on Stitcher. Any questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog or you can send me an email, and that's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Now let's get right into today's podcast. Veterinary care is expensive. You know, I should know, for I'm a veterinarian and I owned a veterinary clinic for nearly 15 years. I practiced for nearly 20 years. Veterinary medicine really has changed dramatically within the last 20 years. You know, during my period of practice, you know, gone are the days of James Herriot when veterinarians treated every type of animal. They regularly made house calls. This story is going to give you an understanding of why veterinary charges have gone up so much, plus the top things that you can be doing now to help lower your veterinary fees. As veterinarians can offer more and more advanced diagnostics and treatment, no question veterinary fees have risen accordingly. Veterinary visits and surgery cost pet owners almost $800, cat owners almost $500 per year, according to the American Pet Products Manufacturers Association. If your dog or cat becomes seriously ill, you can easily spend thousands of dollars on veterinary fees. For instance, knee surgery in dogs can easily cost upwards of $5,000. A dog or cat with cancer can have radiation therapy and chemotherapy costing in excess of $7,000. Veterinarians now are charging much more to make their practices more profitable and obviously in doing so, making more money. Veterinary clinics have escalating costs. They have increasing staff salaries, higher expenses for all this diagnostic equipment. Yet at the same time, they're also seeing decreases in new clients. For a clinic to be financially profitable, it means charging more per client and having the clients that they do have come in more often to their practice. This combination of things such as higher salaries, all these much escalating higher expenses, but no real new clients means that the only way for most veterinary practices to make more money and remain profitable is charge more per client, hence the higher veterinary costs. And you know, it's a real unfortunate situation to see this whole combination of, you know, these increasing fees, these increasing, you know, basic level of expectations. And at the same point, we've got a whole segment of the population which really can't afford this escalating veterinary care. So you really need to be aware of some of these suggestions that I'm going to give you as far as how you can individually lower your veterinary costs. My first suggestion, I think, is one many of you would take to heart, is just price shopping. No, it doesn't mean you always go around and who's the cheapest vet and that's who I go to. And I do strongly advocate that you develop a good, strong relationship with a veterinary practice, but knowing full well that prices at animal hospitals can vary widely. In my own small town of Nelson's, for instance, my practice charged the least of all the veterinary practice, but many clients didn't know that. You know, make sure that you get recommendations from other pet owners first. Like, who is it that you, who do they trust? As before you sort of make a decision on a veterinary clinic, deciding on the fanciest looking building. There's a misconception that the higher price practices give a better quality of care, but this isn't always true. Ask about the common procedures, you know, such as exams, neutering, and spaying. In addition, don't forget to ask discounts from your veterinarian. You know, often when I was in practice, I had a client asking, they would get a discount. Sometimes some veterinarians offer multiple pet discounts as well as discounts for seniors. So it's just being, you know, really advocating for your pet, asking many questions, you know, asking other pet owners, who do you see, and then visiting those veterinarians before you make a decision. But just being really ensuring that you're also asking questions about cost, as well as, you know, basic levels of care questions for your pet. Next, be wary of the business practice popularized by McDonald's, the upsell. Examples of this include your veterinarian suggesting preventive diagnostic tests during a checkup, or in many cases advising having a dental cleaning. You should be asking and questioning why. Just how bad are your dog or cat's teeth? Is the degree of dental disease really that significant? One of the major veterinary associations is advising that any pet with grade 1 gingivitis, that's mild gum inflammation, should have a dental scale and polish. I mean, you're looking at a procedure costing at least $300. Then there's the risk to your your pet, which has to be under general anesthesia. It does have high profit margins as the animal health technician or the assistant usually does all the work. However, in my opinion, a pet with mild gum disease doesn't need to have this done. You can begin preventive care at home. You can begin to brush your pet's teeth. You could feed a diet designed to break off some of the plaque and tartar. This is only one example, although in my opinion, it's the biggest upsell in veterinary medicine today. Hospitalization fees are another avoidable expense. Your veterinarian is going to make a lot more money if he or she can keep your pet in the veterinary hospital for a period of time. It can charge a fee for the day of hospitalization plus a fee for re-examining your pet in the morning. Ask to have the procedure performed while you're there. Let's use x-rays as an example. You can get the practice to schedule this while you're waiting. It doesn't take long to perform x-rays. And most cases are likely going to comply if only you ask. By being a little bit of a pain in the butt, you're going to get a better service at a lot lower price. It just, once again, you know, being assertive yourself, advocating for your pet and asking those questions. Then there's medication, the veterinary medication. No question, it can be very expensive and it's marked up a lot at your veterinarian. The markups range from 50 to 125% plus the prescription fee. There are many ways to save money on pet medications. First, ask your veterinarian about a drug's cost and find out if it is available through local pharmacies. Your local drugstore may offer it at a much lower price. You can also ask your veterinarian about lower price generic medications that would be appropriate. Many of these medications have generic options. In addition to your local pharmacy, you can check veterinary medication prices at drsfostersmith.com, 1-800-PetMeds.com, and PetCareRx.com. You have the right to ask your veterinarian for prescriptions that can be filled elsewhere and save yourself that unnecessary expense. What is the biggest key, in my opinion? You know, the biggest key to lowering your veterinary fees is by being an involved and empowered pet owner. You need to take charge of your pet's health care. No question, you know your pet better than anyone else. How well do you think your veterinarian gets to know your pet with just a 15-minute exam once a year? You know, educate yourself on basic at-home veterinary care. Learn how to do a basic veterinary at-home exam. And then use some of these inexpensive natural remedies that you're hearing about in the podcast. You know, let's use allergies as an example. For many of you are going to have allergic pets. You can either continue to use the expensive prescription medication from your veterinarian, or you consider starting to try some of these natural remedies. These include therapeutic doses of the essential fatty acids, being 1,000 milligrams per 10 pounds of body weight daily. Or for short-term flare-ups, you can use a herbal remedy called licorice to stop the itching. Now, this is just one small example, but can you now see how by taking charge of your pet's health care, you can have a happier, healthier pet? So in summary, I think by now you should have an understanding of why veterinary costs have rapidly risen. And it's not, yes, in part it's veterinary driven. In other part, it's just a matter of competition driven. We've graduated so many veterinarians. We have these new graduate veterinarians with huge, you know, student loan costs in excess of $100,000. So they've got big pressure just to even pay off their loans. We have, if you look at the number of veterinarians and the number of pets in North America, the veterinarians are increasing faster than the number of new pets. So you can see this congruence of, you know, increased expectations by pet owners, by veterinarians who are really financially feeling the pinch, and then these increased costs. But there's things you can do. You can price shop. You can avoid the common veterinary upsells and avoid hospitalization fees. You can get less expensive prescription medication and take charge of your pet's health care by using inexpensive at-home remedies. I encourage you to at least use some of these suggestions to start saving money immediately on your veterinary costs. So the second part of today's podcast, I want to talk a little bit about Dr. Pohl. Recently, the Michigan State Veterinary Board ruled against Dr. Pohl. He owns Pohl Veterinary Services in Michigan, and he was ordered by the board to pay a $500 fine that must be paid within 90 days of the ruling and 1 year probation in which he must complete continuing education in IV fluids, anesthesia, as well as emergency and critical care courses. While on probation, Dr. Pohl can have no violations of the state health code. This is consistent with the board's previous disciplinary action against Dr. Pohl, who in 2012 was ordered to pay a $500 fine and complete CE in the areas of documentation and record keeping, small animal reproduction and ultrasound techniques and interpretation as a result of a complaint about a 2010 incident. The Veterinary Board met March 26 in Michigan to discuss the recommendations of the administrative law judge who heard testimony in January regarding the charges. While the judge's decision has not been made public, it was safe to assume prior to the board's ruling the opinion did not fall in Dr. Pohl's favor. Dr. Pohl chose to release a statement, which I'll discuss after this part of the podcast, about the ruling, defending his practice philosophy and treatment decision. The owners of the dog at the center of the case also went public with their support of Dr. Pohl, even posing with a photo with Pohl holding their dog, Mr. Pigglesworth. Pohl and his son, Charles Pohl, who is now cast in his show, The Incredible Dr. Pohl, as a non-credentialed assistant to his father, remain adamant that Mr. Pigglesworth received treatment that met the standard of care at a price the dog owners could afford. Dr. Pohl successfully treated Lloyd and Mabel Frisbee's dog, Mr. Pigglesworth, for $250, a price they could afford at a standard of care which two full-time practicing veterinarians testified met the minimum standards of care. Charles told DVM36, 4 years later, Mr. Pigglesworth is perfectly fine. His owners are more than happy with the treatment that they received, while everyone involved could not have asked for better results. Under the standards of care set by the state agency, the Frisbees would have been forced to put their dog down or take him home to suffer. Dr. Pohl has been criticized in the veterinary community by those who believe his top-rated joke glorifies substandard or outdated veterinary care. His publicist disputes the notion. Dr. Pohl is committed to the well-being and care for his clients, animals, and owners, and he understands the dire need to offer his clients affordable veterinary care within their financial means. But affordable care does not mean substandard care, as some critics have mischaracterized his practice. Dr. Pohl knows his patients intimately after more than 40 years of practice, and he understands them better than anyone else. The pet owners are faced with difficult decisions, such as having to put their pets down when they can't afford a large vet. His philosophy is to provide all the necessary treatments required by state law while respecting the financial situations in his rural community. Dr. Pohl will continue to provide low-cost care and will not stop while one person's animal suffers untreated. The investigation into Mr. Pigglesworth was spurred by a complaint filed by Eden Myers, DVM of Austin, Texas, who, after she watched an episode, followed the treatment of the two-year-old Boston Terrier was hit by a car. The Nat Geo Wild Network toasts Pohl's work as old-school approach to veterinary medicine. Pohl calls it a common-sense approach to treatment and care. The Michigan Board of Veterinary Medicine has come to its own conclusion. Clearly, you know, that story was sort of based on the DVM 360, that's the veterinary all-news site, which obviously strongly advocates for a certain level of veterinary practice. Many of you are not in that position to afford that level of care. What I want to do next, this is the response from Dr. Pohl, and I'll summarize a little bit about it. He's talking about a veterinarian's call for an affordable standard of care by Dr. Jan Pohl. And he claims that when I first came to America more than 40 years ago, I paid close attention to Emma Lazarus's poem inscribed in the base of the Statue of Liberty, which begins, "Give me your tired, your poor, well, I thought I've come to the right country." My philosophy on veterinary ethics is simple. First, do no harm. And for me, this philosophy applies to the owner as well as the patient. In practice, that means applying a common sense approach to treatment and care. Veterinary medicine has changed dramatically over the years as the emphasis moved farm to small animal. Many of the small community-based vets have been replaced with larger companies operating numerous practices. There's an increased emphasis on the profitability of the practice, and vet costs have skyrocketed at a higher percentage than even human healthcare with advances in medicine and treatment. Having treated more than 500,000 animals in my career, I rarely see a problem I haven't seen many times before. The question I ask myself when I see a patient is, what do I have to do to reach the best possible outcome in the fairest and most economical way possible? It saddens me when I get letters from countless fans across the country who are in despair because they can't afford the care their animals need. Fortunately, states are taking the decisions of pet care out of the vet's discretion. Through law and regulation, they are forcing veterinarians to adopt a standard of care that is less affordable for the client. The decision-making is being taken away from the consumer and the veterinarian, put in the hands of the government. Unless we act now, we may see millions of pets with owners who are unable to afford to take their animals to the vet. After all, animals do not have the same rights as humans. Owners have the option to euthanize or surrender to overburdened rescue organizations any animal they cannot afford to keep or care for. I believe there are far too many animals euthanized, abandoned, or left to recover or die because their owners cannot afford the care that their animals need. This is a silent animal cruelty in our country, and there should be a solution to end this. I don't think the Statue of Liberty stood for this, and I certainly don't. So I think there, in summary, with what Dr. Pohl was saying, and if I sort of give some sense of how do you put a balance into that, I mean, clearly he's fulfilling a strong service. He is servicing clients that really can't afford it, and he's speaking to a huge segment of the population, and there are many veterinarians that are threatened by him. Do I think he could practice slightly differently and slightly up his standard of care but still be reasonable and cost effective? Yes, I do at certain times. Do I think he's due to have some criticism? Yes, I do. Do I think that it wouldn't cost that much in some cases, such as donning exam gloves, surgical gloves when he heads into surgery, putting on a gown? Obviously he could do that. But at the same point, do I think he pushes so many buttons because he sees, especially all these veterinarians throughout the country that are feeling these financial pressures. Yes, I do. I mean, so I think there really is a good sense of balance. And I think for the most part, he offers a fantastic service and an option that is not available for most clients throughout North America. Now we're coming to the last part of today's podcast, how to get your dog to dog. Now we're coming to the last part of today's podcast. I was asked by a listener who was just going crazy. How can I get my dog to stop barking? You know, I've tried a couple of things I've read in the internet. They're not seeming to be working. So what I want to do is summarize a list of 6 techniques that you can use to help stop your dog from barking. Well, all of them can be very successful. You shouldn't expect miraculous results overnight. The longer your dog has been practicing the barking behavior, the longer is it going to take for him to change his ways. But always remember to keep these tips in mind while training. Don't yell at your dog to be quiet. It just sounds like you're barking along with them. Keep your training sessions positive and upbeat. Be consistent. Don't confuse your dog. Everyone in the family must apply the training methods every time your dog barks inappropriately. You can't let your dog get away with inappropriate barking sometimes and not others. You need to be consistent. So one, remove the motivation. Your dog is barking to get some type of reward. Otherwise, he wouldn't do it. Figure out why he's barking and remove it. Don't give your dog the opportunity to continue the barking behavior, you know, such as barking at a passerby. You know, he's getting rewarded. He sees them, he barks. Number two, ignore the barking. Ignore your dog's barking for as long as it takes him to stop. That means don't give him any attention at all while he's barking. Your attention only rewards him for being noisy. Don't talk to him, don't touch him, don't even look at him. When he finally quiets, even to take a breath, then reward him with a treat. To be successful with this method, you must wait as long as it takes for him to stop barking. If he barks for an hour and you finally get so frustrated that you yell at him to be quiet, the next time he'll probably bark for an hour and a half. He learns that if he just barks long enough, you'll give him attention. Desensitize your dog to the stimulus. Gradually get your dog accustomed to whatever is causing him to bark. Start with the stimulus, the thing that makes him bark at a distance. It must be far enough away that he doesn't bark when he sees it. Feed him lots of good treats. Move the stimulus a little closer, or perhaps a little as a few inches or a few feet to start, and feed treats. If the stimulus moves out of sight, stop giving your dog treats. You want your dog to learn that the appearance of the stimulus leads to good things, treats. You know, such as him, you know, barking at other dogs. Or you start out by having a friend with a dog stand out of sight far enough so your dog won't bark at the other dog. As your friend and her dog come into view, start feeding your dog lots of yummy treats. Stop feeding treats as soon as your friend and her dog disappear from view. Repeat the process multiple times. We're trying to desensitize them to the stimulus. Number four, teach your dog the quiet command. It may sound nonsensical. One of the first steps of this technique is to teach your dog to bark on command. Give your dog the command speak. Wait for him to bark 2 or 3 times and then stick a tasty treat in front of his nose. When he stops barking to sniff the treat, praise him and give him the treat. Repeat until he starts barking as soon as you say speak. Once your dog can reliably bark on command, teach him the quiet command. In a calm environment with no distractions, tell him to speak. When he starts barking, say quiet and stick a treat in front of his nose. Praise him for being quiet and then give him the treat. Number five, ask your dog for an incompatible behavior. When your dog starts barking, ask him to do something that's incompatible with barking. Teaching your dog to react to barking stimuli with something that inhibits him from barking, such as lying down in his bed. For example, someone comes to the door, toss a treat at his mat, and tell him to go to your place. When he's reliably going to his mat to earn a treat, up the ante by opening the door while he's on his mat. If he gets up, close the door immediately. Repeat this until he stays on his mat when the door opens. Then increase the difficulty by having someone ring the doorbell while your dog is on his mat. Reward him if he stays in place. And the last point is you got to keep him tired. Make sure your dog is getting sufficient physical and mental exercise every day. A tired dog is a good dog and one who is less likely to bark from boredom or frustration. Depending on his breed, age, and health, your dog may require several long walks as well as a good game of chasing the ball and playing with some interactive toys. So there's my 6 tips, and I hope some of these can help you finally stop your dog from barking. So thanks for listening to this edition of today's podcast. My name, once again, is Dr. Andrew Jones. For those of you, I would definitely appreciate it if you subscribe to my podcast. You can do on iTunes or Stitcher. If you have any questions or comment, feel free to post a comment on my blog. That's at veterinarysecrets.com/blog. I'm putting every podcast up there on the blog. And then you can also send me an email. The email is at veterinarysecrets.com/podcast. Once again, thanks for listening. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones, and I'll talk to you again next week. We'll